Thank you, Ursula. Yoko, you want to come up next? I have a pair of glasses for walking and a pair of glasses for reading. Yoko Murakami, she's a second-year medical student at Stanford and has worked in several free clinics in the Bay Area serving the uninsured. She's working with the Physicians for National Healthcare Program and the American Medical Student Association, which is a national group working on this, to educate and mobilize the next generation of medical professionals for activating healthcare reform. So she was at the conference, and she'll talk about what the students are up to. And there's that clipboard going around if you want to support the students on January 12th.
So I just wanted to shed a little bit of light on what the medical students are doing to be a part of all this. And I feel that we feel that we have an obligation. We have an obligation to, as future physicians and to our patients, to be a part of this movement and to be an active part of national healthcare reform. So unfortunately, most medical school curricula do not cover the nuts and bolts of healthcare reform and the policies and the advocacies, the tools of advocacy that we would need. So I was one of almost 60 medical students 2 weeks ago in San Diego at the conference who were very active in getting involved in this national movement. So we have, our goals are two-pronged. We have education and activism as our two goals. Education in two forms. First, in the form of educating our colleagues or medical students about single payer. Because there is no formal education about it, many of my fellow students have no idea what it actually means and what it does not mean. And that's one thing that's very important in understanding and moving forward with being active about this. And also, the second part of education is to instill the tools to be active political candidates and political activists and moving forward with this kind of reform. So all the Southern California medical schools, Stanford, UCSF, UCLA, USC, UC San Diego, Irvine, and Davis, had representatives at the conference, and we were all working in workshops to actually spread the word within our campuses. I am a part of a group at Stanford to bring in panelists and speakers about single payer and on a more general level about healthcare reform. So we are actively trying to spread the word, and if you can help us, we will be mobilizing on January 12th to go to Sacramento for Lobby Day, and this is where we will be actively part of the movement there. So if you all could be a part of the movement and support us, that would be a great opportunity for us too. So I just wanted to let you know that we are, as the future of medicine, we will be a part of this movement as well.
So our next speaker is John Shear, who I think he just retired a bit ago.
He did, yes.
From family practice in Petaluma. And
43 years.
How many?
43
years. Okay.
You wouldn't believe it, would you?
And he's on the executive board of the California Physicians Alliance and a past president of the California Physicians Alliance. And he'll be speaking on, help me, John.
Canadian health system.
Canadian healthcare system. What's going on there?
Okay, unfortunately, that was not Obama calling for advice from us about what to do for his health care plan. But we'll be getting to him pretty soon, and we'll be having a chat, I'm sure. I'm just going to start with a quote. Quote, "In this day and age, I can't understand why this rich country can't have health care for people who need it." I'm quoting my wife's cousin from Eastern Canada, who we met with last Sunday here in San Francisco. And she's like almost all Canadians that you meet. They are puzzled. They are baffled. They are surprised that not everyone in our country can get health care when they need it. So what I brought away from the PNHP national meeting as far as the Canadian healthcare system is that it's alive and well, just as our system is sick and ailing. And I'm going to do one more quote that I brought away from that. And listen to this now, quote, "The vast majority of Canadians get the vast majority of what they need the vast majority of the time." That's the end of my talk. No, not really. I'll elaborate a little bit. But I just want to bring you up to date on three or four things. I just have a few minutes. And the Canadian system is functioning very successfully, but it's a work in progress. Any healthcare system is going to be a work in progress, and none is going to be perfect. The people and the government are aware of the problems in the system. They're aware of the advantages of the system, for sure. But they're aware of some of the problems that have to be dealt with. And the government and the people are cooperating to fix them. There is no serious talk of scrapping their system for a private system. You'll hear rumors about pressure on them from one source or another, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a second. But nobody in Canada wants to get rid of their system. Now, some of the sticking points that we hear about quite a bit. Now, a major concern of Canadians and a favorite topic of critics of the Canadian system are the waiting lists. And for some appointments, tests, and procedures, there are potential patients have to be put on a waiting list. And since there are differences in healthcare delivery from province to province, they're all slightly different, the waiting periods differ depending on location. In some of the provinces, the waiting list would be, the period of waiting would be similar to what it would be for an insured patient in the United States. But in some of the provinces, the waiting period can be agonizingly, in the literal sense of that word, agonizingly long. And this obviously is unacceptable and obviously needs to be corrected, and they know it and they're working on it. Last year, the Ottawa government set up a program that will guarantee timely access to health care, and they have that defined, timely access to health care by the year 2010. And they are committed to changes in their public system and realize that a private system is not a solution. All they have to do is look across the border and see that it's not a solution. And they have goals that they have set with a timeline to improve the system to the point where the waiting times are reasonable. And that's going to include, I won't go into all the details, but it's going to include things like increasing the supply of health professionals, and a couple of our speakers touched on that, as important for a universal health plan. They're going to try to finally include prescription drugs in the Canada Health Plan. They're going to expand primary care. We heard about that as an important part of the program, and work on better chronic disease management and some other things. Now, another thing I just wanted briefly to, that was touched on, I just wanted briefly to talk about, is the concern about those Canadians who are working very hard to try to preserve their public system and try to prevent the threat of privatization. And where that stands now is that some of the advocacy for privatization comes, unfortunately, from some Canadian physicians, certainly not most of them. And the issue is around, you guessed it, reimbursement, money. Some quarters, there's call for privatization among those physicians. Now, the data shows that the average yearly income for doctors in Canada is about $200,000, a little over, in U.S. In U.S. dollars, and in some provinces up as high as an average of $230,000. some specialists earn $300,000 to $400,000 per year. In the 90s, I had a partner who was Canadian. He was here for about a year and went back to Canada, to Ontario, because he said, my patients can't get what they need here. That he couldn't tolerate that. I talked to him on the phone about a year and a half ago, and he told me what his income was. His income at the time we talked in equivalent dollars was 1.5 times more than I had ever earned per year in my practice. So they're not doing badly, and I don't think they have enough left to complain about. Among the things that the government is doing, paying attention to this, because it just doesn't work to cut the incomes of the doctors. It just doesn't work. It doesn't make for a good system. The Ontario government approved a contract with the doctors in Ontario for a 12.5% increase in reimbursement to be effective next year. I think that shows that there's progress. Just one more thing about the expense of the system. Their system continues to be affordable and sustainable. It's been sustainable for a long time. And contrary to detractors, there are quite a bit about the Canadians being impoverished by taxes, really isn't true. Canadian taxes are about 10% more than U.S. taxes, but what they get for their money, at least in health care, if you factor it in, it just about comes out even. In other words, the about $6,000 per person in the United States that each of us are paying, one way or another, through deductions from our wages, that we'd be paid in wages instead of health care benefits, or out-of-pocket expenses, insurance premiums, etc. It's about a wash, and slight increase in taxes that we have is well worth it. So there are some more things I could talk about, but we're limited for time. Two real quick things I want to tell you, just take 45 seconds. Please be wary when you read comments on the Canadian healthcare system of two organizations that may be reporting in the whatever it is you're reading. And one is the Simon Fraser Institute, and the other is the Pacific Research Institute. Simon Fraser is a source of unbelievable distortions, outright lies of the failings of the Canadian healthcare system. It's to be disregarded. But unfortunately, it seems to be in the Rolodex of every newspaper in the United States. You know, they're usually quoted. Pacific Research Institute is here in San Francisco. And again, it's very, very biased, and we'd never, ever seen anything good about Canadian medicine if it heard it. So, okay, thanks.
Thank you.